Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Good evening and welcome to the History of Germany podcast. I got to jump in really quick and say, I think my audio was off. I'm not sure. I think I was talking into a different microphone or something in this episode. It's not too bad, but I do apologize. And the other thing, upon deliberation, I thought we will skip one episode we had planned or a couple of episodes, namely about like Vikings and the Viking impact of like German villages up, you know, up the, like raids up the Rhine and all the way up to the Danube, and just really all like even in Italy and all parts of German speaking worlds were somehow impacted by Vikings for a while. I mean, it was a danger that, you know, it was just the scourge of Europe. But instead of doing that, there's just great other podcasts out there that handle the Vikings. One that I've listened to myself is the History of Vikings podcast. There's more than one, actually. But the History of Vikings is great. Noah runs a fantastic podcast and covers not just the history, but also like the myths. My Saxon episode was popular when I described the pagan beliefs, and the history of Vikings has a lot more of that, but also up to the point where we are in the chronological order, just like exactly some 1,000 years ago. I'll add the link to the show notes. It's just thehistoryofvikings.com, but this allows us to jump ahead a bit and get to some of the other topics on the list. All right.
Welcome to the History of Germany with Judith Strusenberg and Travis Dow. I'm Judith, and the last few episodes we were about the Salian dynasty.
A bunch of Henrys and a Conrad. The dynasty, the last real Frankish dynasty in Germany, ruled the Holy Roman Empire for a whole century, with many challenges like constant revolts and the whole investiture controversy thing, which we spent several episodes on. But just listen to the last episodes for all of that.
Exactly. It was tough for the Salians, but we talked about that for the last several episodes. And finally, Henry V died with no heirs, and now we'll move on to the chaos that always happens in a dynastic shift.
Now, for a century, we've only been with the high and mighty, kings and popes and nobles, the rich, basically. But what was going on outside the castles? How did society change, and how did like German culture develop in that 100 years?
I dug up an article in German that described the lives of the average German in the 11th century, and we got a quick summary for you. Along with the social fabric, the rural life also changed. The farmers pushed the wilderness further back and made their environment in which they lived arable. They could plow a rougher terrain that had defied previous attempts through the use of new agricultural equipment, and they made a transition from the 2 to 3 field economy, which is a big improvement on agricultural yields in general. That means more food, easier grown.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. People were happy. They were full. Yeah. Yeah. With less work.
More food. That's the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So kind of a economic boom. I mean, you know, population growth. People are growing. Yeah.
But this only worked together. The farmers who lived in a village, they organized cooperatively and in a farmstead protected by palisades, of which were on average about 7 in one village. The whole life of a large family consisting of 20 to 30 people took place, and all the work of the everyday life was done here. baskets braided, wagon mm-hmm. wheels repaired, skins tanned, and together the well and the village green were used. Even a small church with cemetery or like something like that mm-hmm. already belonged to a Salian village.
Every American town has a Dairy Queen. Every Salian village had a small church with a cemetery. It's like a franchise.
But not only the villages changed, also big cities like Nuremberg were founded. Nuremberg, we will talk about it more often, I think, when it's about German history. Often the new cities were built in the protection of castles, or they were built around a royal palace or a bishop.
Oh, bishopric?
Yeah. The population grew and people took more and more responsibility within their environment. Accordingly, new urban self-confidence developed in the cities. And the center of the cities were the markets. Merchants and craft guides gained an influence and quarreled trading privileges from the kings. Nuremberg is a great example for this. Yeah.
You said, like, urban self-confidence. Instantly, because we met in Nuremberg. Like, we were hanging out in Nuremberg, and that we got the tour where they're like, these like nouveau riche merchants, like there, so there, that's where the market was. So there's the market in the middle of the town, and they got rich just from the trade, and they didn't need nobility, or you know, they had enough money to build their own castle, and there was
own nobility, and they showed their richness, their wealth, along with their noble houses, and
And this was, so this was the beginning of that time. So basically, the Salian dynasty was the 11th century, more or less, you know. So the 11th, like, and it's interesting because that's a, so we're about to do an episode on the Crusades. That was at the very end of, you know, started at the very end of the century. And for English speakers, everyone kind of like, oh, it's 1066, Battle of Hastings. And then that's the, that's the beginning of the Norman Age. Also, where there was agricultural changes and a lot of, like, technologies came from France, you know, life changed. And so it's that, you know, all over Europe, I guess, we do see some just changes, just, you know, societal, cultural changes, all these things that happened in the last 100 years, the investiture controversies, and now the, you know, it is really interesting when we get to the Crusades, because it's this exact time, and these really pious people going village to village, and that's all right now, this time. So we are talking now the Salians, because they're dead now. So to summarize them, it's 1024 to 1125, so 101 years, sorry. But so they made, and it's kind of like the Ottos before them, the Liedelfingers. The Salians had like 4 German kings, emperors, 100 years. It's very similar, like the last German dynasties are very consistent, and maybe it's a German thing, I don't know, but like 4 German kings and emperors, Conrad the Second, and then 3 Heinrichs, which is kind of like there was a Conrad or Henry the First, and then 3 Ottos, so now we have a Conrad the Second and 3 Heinrichs. That's Henry the Third, Fourth, and Fifth, and that's the same investiture controversy, Heinrichs, Henrys. And then this is kind of the High Middle Ages. Conrad's reign is the high point of medieval imperial rule and the relative resting, like peaceful phase of the empire. Otto the Second, maybe, was like one of the times where the emperor was the most powerful, like in a dictator sense, maybe, since like Charles the Great. But Conrad, it just kind of went downhill from Conrad for sure. So if you did listen to the last episodes, you know, but when you did said like constant strife, constant revolts and everything, it's like constant, like all the Henrys all the time dealt with basically civil wars. So we have, you know, the Burgundians came in to this Reichsverband, the imperial order, sort of, and the idea of the trias, the tria regna, like the royal triad, the royal, you know, it's the the triad. Like, you guys know what that means, right? It's three. So there's, you got the East Frankish, German, the Italian, and the Burgundians. So East Frankish is German. So you got Germans, mm-hmm. Italians, and Burgundian, like French. And that all, so that kind of became this idea of like the German Empire, the Holy Roman Empire is this tria regna. So you have the emperor over these kingdoms, so to speak. And again, it's, you know, Germans pretending to be Roman emperors, kind of. Kaiser is Caesar, you know, so that whole thing. We talked about what else. Okay, what else did we do? Like, it was actually a busy dynasty.
Of course. It was Henry III. He was crowned as a child, and he was the first Salian which was raised to be a ruler. Really, mm-hmm. a powerful testimony of his claim to power and his faith. We can still see today. It's the Spire Cathedral. We made a heirloom episode about it.
Yep.
It's episode 49, I think, of the History of Germany podcast. It was quite interesting to talk about the cathedral and its long history. It was great. I liked it. If you haven't heard it, you should, I think. Mm-hmm. It's the largest surviving Romanesque church in the world. What can we say about Henry III? In several campaigns, he dealt with Poland, he dealt with Hungary, and he provided in northern Italy for the creation of legal standards that should endure for a long time, for really a hundred of years. And one could say his reign was stable in the empire, and his influence within the church was great. He named several popes, and at the same time he strengthened the power of the church with mm-hmm. lands and money.
Yeah.
This decision was maybe not the best one could do. It was great for him.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, it's good for him. Was it like a good idea long term or for the grandchildren maybe? But give the church money. They're loyal to you. But
Someone who had to deal with this decision was his son, was Henry IV.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is well known for his walk to Canossa in 1077. It is said that he stood for 3 days barefoot in winter and an orange shirt in front of the castle where the Pope was in to beg for forgiveness.
Yep, the walk to Canossa, I just want to point out, and the English version that... Don't underestimate this story, because maybe it never even happened, or maybe it happened in a, you know, it was like premeditated. The Pope and Emperor said, hey, this is how you're going to do your retribution sort of thing.
It's a great story.
I'm bringing it up because in German speaking worlds, it's debated. Like Americans or, you know, people that aren't that engaged with Holy Roman Empire history might just like, oh, that's a neat story. The king goes on his knees to the Pope and begs for forgiveness. It's like, no, this is a deep story with many layers and many centuries of discussion of various, like, should he have done that? Was it right or wrong? Did it even happen? And yeah, it's just kind of like, I think it's interesting that in the English-speaking world, it's like, oh yeah, he wore a hair shirt. Oh, that's neat. Yeah, okay. Yeah. But it's like this crazy pivotal moment in German history. And it's a fun story. It also kind of, if you're telling the story of the investiture controversy and like the wars between the popes and anti-popes and Kaiser and anti-Kaiser and this whole allegiance, then this was the whole climax of that like dramatic you know, if you're gonna make a Hollywood movie about the investiture controversy, then The Walk to Canossa is the dramatic climax of that movie. All
yes,
right,
often.
That's how you. And again, it's just this war of like who can. Oh, it's a war of power. Like who can appoint bishops, and you yes. know that means the bishops are going to be loyal, and yeah, so.
Think the story of Henry the Fourth is a story one could make a Hollywood movie of. He mm-hmm. was, yeah.
I'm sure there are movies about him in Germany. Even like I know you know there's the ZDF like documentary and stuff. Like you can see the maybe even in English. By the way, Die Deutschen is like a mini series by ZDF, and I think there's ZDF documentary like ZDF documentaries mm-hmm. in English too. So. Yeah, you could see it, like, I watched it dramatized, you know, he's, like, going through the snow, walking on his knee, or barefoot, at least, and then, like, on his knees, and, like, oh, and then, yeah, and then you see a historian saying, like, maybe it never even happened, you know, so,
but, maybe, yeah. but not yeah, only this story, he was, not the easiest guy, and...
All the Henry, it seems like, yeah, then also his son, they all suffered from, like, attitude problems or something
yeah.
like everyone yeah. just kind of ends up hating the Henrys, so yeah, it's yeah they're kind of jerks, so yeah, so maybe that just had to happen, maybe that was like, okay, I'll support you again, but you need to show this humility, so yeah.
Yes, you think that the son of Henry the Fourth, Henry the Fifth, took his father to prison to get king by himself. I mean, wow, what mm-hmm. kind of family is this?
Mm-hmm. And then he did the, and then he became his father. Like everybody hated
yeah,
him too.
Yeah, he so. Ended up yeah. Being yeah. Worse than his father.
Yeah, and I think that kind of ties into, like, if you look at Henry the Fourth, he might have in this whole dynasty, the whole all of the Salians, Henry the Fourth might have the most complicated legacy or the most like controversial.
Yes.
Yeah, but yeah, it's like some people think he was great, maybe like one of the best, you know, kings of that time,
emperors ever.
Emperor, yeah, just in German history, and like very politically astute and everything, and you know,
yes.
and they would then say he was just given a very difficult hand, like he just had to. Everybody hated him, and blah 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 blah. Other historians
yes.
say no, he was a scumbag. he was a low life, you know, greedy, spoiled, and you know the truth is probably both. I mean, it just depends on who you asked, and you know who his friends were, and you know, but yeah, he's really one of those like. Splitting characters that historians are just really, they disagree on the whole assessment of him. So
yeah,
is Henry the Fourth that was kidnapped? Yeah, Henry the Fourth was
yeah,
kidnapped
he was
as a
kidnapped
kid.
As a child.
That whole drama. Yeah, oh, that's such a great. Yeah, he definitely should be in movies like all the time. Kidnapped by the Archbishop of Cologne, and
you
Cologne is a fantastic.
Totally
I love
hear
the city of
the
Cologne.
Episode
by the way.
About this. We talked about this great story, by the way.
I almost got a heart attack. Like, it was too much. I had to calm down, knit some rows. But the main thing is, what you already said was, even his son turned against him. His son had him locked up. His son ended up taking over right at the turn of the century, like, the 5th of January, 1106. But it didn't, like we said, it didn't take that long for... Turns out Henry V is just like his dad.
The first 5 years were okay, the nobles have a good decision. He's not as crazy
right.
as his dad was. But then in 1111, he captured the Pope to extort his coronation. Yeah, and the continuation of the investiture.
Did he fall off a horse and like there's brain damage and like we don't, you know, there's a, you know, like... Do you know the story of Caligula, like the Roman emperor, who like everybody loved, and then he had an accident? What, I forget what it was, a horse kicked him or something, and then when he came out, he was a different person, and he thought everybody was out to kill him, and it's Caligula, like, you know, the worst Roman emperor ever. And I'm just wondering,
maybe,
I'm like, is there something the historians didn't tell us? Like,
it's
he just
something like this, but maybe it's just a good family tradition, nobody knows.
Because, like, for 5 years, he's like, oh, hey, hey, Henry's great. Hi, Henry. And then kidnaps the Pope. That, like, wow. That's just like, you don't do that, like, nebenbei. Like, you, that takes some, you don't do that on a whim. So, anyway, yeah. No. I just, you know.
But he just did it. And from this point on, things went worse.
I bet Budler knows. Where's Budler when you need him? It's like, yes, of course. He fell off a horse. He fell from the horse. And then he became really mean and he kidnaps the Pope. Is that my Budler accent? Yeah. Okay, so yeah, he was king for a while.
Until 1125.
Yeah, so another, okay.
He died with just 39, but without a male offspring. And here we are at a dynamic shift we talked about at the beginning of this episode. So, no. There are some major changes.
This is, so we also have, like, what did we must have ended with that last time, the whole Concordat of Worms. It was just 3 years before his death, where that was the end of the investiture controversy, where he gave up, you know, the Pope kind of won. It was the king, I mean, so Henry V had to, like, renounce the right to install bishops with, you know, the whole ring and staff thing, which I think I made fun of as a Harry Potter ring. No, yeah, it's all ringing a bell. Yeah, I remember. And so now the church has that power. There was a compromise where, like, the king is still there for elections and this and that. So the king has, like, a veto right, sort of. If the king's not happy, they can... In any case, yeah, so the investor... But then he dies right away, and...
He dies, and before he died at his deathbed, he... transferred the affairs of state to Henry II. It's another Henry, of course. The Staufer Henry II. And he was regarded as the most promising candidate for his successor, and nothing came of it. He was just too sure of his case and acted accordingly. Arrogant and had trouble with Adalbert of Mainz, also a very powerful and powerful adversary. Mm-hmm. This was good for the man we are looking at now, Lothar from Supplinburg. Yeah.
This Supplinburger. Now, but do remember Henry II of... Henry II, he's not like King Henry II, he's Henry II of, like,
Swabia.
The point is, remember this Henry character and the name Staufer and Hohenstaufen, because they're going to come back. Like, you've heard of Barbarossa and all, like, they're definitely, we're going to hear about them again. And spoiler alert, I think it's important to note that the next dynasty of, like, several kings is not the Supplinburger. This episode is about Lothar from Supplinburg, but it's the Staufer, the Hohenstaufen dynasty. So that's, like, that's interesting. And I want to give you that spoiler because, first of all, Wikipedia already has that spoiler. It happened 1,000 years ago. It's not a spoiler. And second, it's interesting to keep this whole thing in mind because Lothar is kind of an interesting character, because who is Lothar? If he's not a Salier and he's not a Staufer, and if you look in, you know, the list of emperors, the Supplinburger dynasty is one guy. So what's going on here? So it is interesting to note, or that's why it's interesting to note that, the whole time there's this guy called Henry II of the Staufer clan, who is like, what is happening? Like, I should be the next king. Henry V said I should be the next king. What is happening? Remember, that's always happening.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. There's always this guy in the shadow, this sneaky Staufer. I said sneaky Staufer on Twitter for some reason. I don't remember why, but those Staufer are sneaky for sure. Anyways, yeah. So Supplinburg. Where am I? Judith.
Where are you? You are east of Brunswick. You're at a marsh castle. Today only the church is preserved. Near the castle, the Salzweg or a salt road, like a Silk Road, passed on an old north-south trade route from the 11th century on. It was crossed here from the east-west trade route from Brunswick to Magdeburg.
Now, the Salt Road is crazy cool because it turns out the Salt Road is like goes way back to prehistoric, just Celtic times, like Hallstatt cultures and all that. So, I love it. I love it. Anyways, so yeah, between Braunschweig and Magdeburg and on the Salt Road goes north-south. So, very cool. But that's, so that's Supplinburg. It's a
marsh castle.
It's a marsh castle. It's a mud castle. Great.
And around 1130, he gave the castle away to the Knights Templar.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. It's a fascinating story. And after the dissolution of the order in 1312 by Pope Clement V, the Supplinburg came to the Brunswick Dukes, and the Dukes handed it over to the Order of St. John, in whose possession it remained until 1820. Then it was used as a commandery and as a stable, I think.
So, it, you know, it must have been like Napoleonic Wars that all that stuff got dissolved. And so, but that's wow. Like some knight's order ran that until 1820. 1820. Like there was already my ancestors were already like on the West Coast. Well, no, not quite, but almost. That's crazy.
Was here when Lothar was born in 1075 during the Saxon Rebellion. And his father was fighting Henry IV when he died on the return of a successful battle against troops loyal to the emperor.
Right.
So Lothar was born after his father was killed.
Yeah, and so he was born in that. That's kind of important, is that Henry V, I suppose, would not have picked Lothar as a as the next king because
he
was on the wrong side. His dad was on the wrong side in the Civil War. So, yeah, that's kind of like he was born in Civil War. It's just kind of a neat story. But it wasn't just his dad. He was shrewd, clever in his own right, too.
And the reason they chose Lothar was not because he was very a strong person or really clever. They all thought he was a weak emperor, and he was quite old at his election. He was 50 years, and so they would have thought, he won't make it long. No.
It's
so
totally like modern popes, like Pope Benedict and like, hey, let's get some, we don't want some young radical that's going to stir up trouble. No. Let's get some old figurehead that we can control. I mean, that's exactly what it is. Let's get some old Supplinburger that doesn't have any heirs.
Work and well this time, but
that's yeah, but that's story. The idea. Yeah. But, yeah.
Yeah. So, they elected Lothar as a new king, and one could imagine Frederick the Second, the Staufer, was not very cool with this decision, and so struggles took place.
Sneaky Staufer. So Lothar ends up crowned. Let's see. So there's already like sneaky Stauffas going, like trying to gain support in Italy. It doesn't work out.
Conrad III, it's Frederick's brother.
Right. Yeah. So it's this whole clan of like the Stauffa are definitely a politically strong. Spoiler alert, they're the next dynasty. But so this is like Now Lothar gets like support from Nuremberg and Speyer, and Stauffer tries to get support in Italy, but it fails. Like, Lothar really is able to, he's fine. He's a one-man dynasty, but he's fine.
Yeah. So let's take a look. Who was this guy?
His name's Gephardt? Wait. his father was Count Gephardt. Gephardt.
Yes.
It's a name you don't hear too much these days.
Yeah, we told that his father died before he was born. And it was in 1106 when Henry V appointed him duke. Some historians say that Henry V wanted to use a weak duke. And for one, he had Lothar, who had until then only a small possession.
Mm-hmm. So, same idea, you know?
Yeah. The first time someone made a wrong decision. He was at the other side, not at the side of the Salians.
So, eventually, he did help out Henry V against this lower, like, Rhine-Westphalian opposition. So, yes. You know, he was able to, yeah, he helped. He was on the emperor's side on some civil wars, I guess. And then, of course, I don't know if we really mentioned this, but Lothar was clever as far as, like, politically, as far as, like, even, like, marriages and, just buying land. Like, just he was a kind of real estate mogul in a way. So he was just good at, he had a good business sense. And just everyone looked at him and said, oh, he's old, he has no heirs, no children, so let's put him beneath me, but in power. And, you know, he was clever, and so they always underestimated him.
Let's put him to power, and we don't have trouble with another dynasty and another four or five kings who won't get away from power.
Right, so 1125... Now, I really want to do a whole episode on just, like, how this worked, because it comes up a lot, like, how is the Holy Roman Emperor elected, and how does this, because it kind of changes over time, but in this case, there's, like, four tribes, sort of, four counties, like, Saxon, yes. Swabia, Franconia, France, and Bavaria.
Yep.
Badenza. Sorry.
They all had to agree to the new king. And Lothar had a daughter. And so he said to the Saxon duke that he could marry his daughter Gertrude and the son of Henry the Black if he would make him king.
Now, when this happened, even Frederick... So the Stauffer's, like, paid homage. He was accepted as the King of Germany. There was an official coronation by the Archbishop of Cologne, which happened in Aachen. So it was, like, fully done deal. This is what happens. Now, hold on. Now, we're going to come back to the conflict with the Stauffer and everything, but let me take a quick break right here, sneakily, right in the middle of the podcast, and... just let you guys know that we've been really lucky to get some support for the show. Like, we now know that we can keep doing this, and we're getting financial support to especially help our buddy Imad, who's translating the show into Arabic. And his idea was, so he's in Egypt, but his idea was to translate this in Arabic for Syrian refugees living in Germany, which is amazing. And we now pay him through sponsors, which is... doubly amazing, because I'm broke. So please do stay tuned to the show, but to help us keep afloat, please listen to these fine messages from our sponsors.
This part's about 3 minutes if you do want to skip ahead, but we really appreciate if you listen. Much thanks to Studio of Sweden, the great makers of super snazzy headphones. They sent me a pair. They're by far the best headphones I own or have ever owned. And there's a promo code that they gave us, which is Alchemy15, because we do the History of Alchemy podcast. Alchemy15. So if you go to studio.com, sudio.com, check out their headphones. They have amazing, like, Bluetooth headphones. They're really affordable for the quality. They are, like I said, the best headphones I've ever had. That's studio.com alchemy 15 is the promo code. And online great books, stop by. There was a promo code TRA, like my name's Travis, onlinegreatbooks.com/TRA. When there's slots available, that's a great way to get classic books. They pick like a book a month and they send you a free book. Well, if you have a membership, it's not exactly free, but yeah, you get, again, I think it's like 15% off. And it's only a limited time, too, but it is kind of a neat thing where they also give you the tools to get to read the book, enjoy the book, get the most out of the book. There's kind of a, you're sort of part of a book club or seminar classes that you can kind of hear more about the book. And then just like apps, like tools to kind of keep you going and reading, like keep you on a schedule to get through the classics. Like it's just, it's more than just classic books, but it's a whole kind of schedule and service around it. onlinegreatbooks.com/TRA if the promotion's still going on. And I'll mention all the sponsors in the show notes. And again, they really do help us out, keep the show running. The show is not free. And on that note, there are new designs like the Astronomical Clock of Prague. There's new History of Alchemy merch in the merch shop. That's podcastnik.com, which is, again, it's all in the show notes. And that's it. See, that wasn't so bad. Thanks so much.
Yodely, yodely, oh, and we're back. All right, sorry.
Yeah, with new conflicts, they broke out with Duke Frederick II when he refused to surrender Lothar goods. We remember Henry V gave him some goods, and now he refuses to hand them over to Lothar because he is still a little, let's say, not amused about the elections.
Okay, so yeah. Exactly. This is that battle that I kind of barely mentioned before where, yeah, Lothar kind of ends up getting support from like Nuremberg, and there's,
yes,
it's a civil war again. But there's a, yeah, so now, I mean, you could consider Conrad of the Staufa a anti-king. Like, it really is full-blown, you know, he has some supporters, like Saxony, and Lothar has some supporters, so.
Yeah, yeah. But what did the Swabians, the Hohenstaufen, they crowned an anti-king, and Frederick's younger brother, Conrad. Conrad was not even crowned king. He immediately fought in Italy for support for his kingship, which he found especially in Milano. In Monza, he was crowned with the Iron Crown.
Yeah, I did a whole episode on the Iron Crown just because, yeah, I was like, it's so symbolic. If,
yes,
it is crazy. Like, why would this guy just go to Italy? That's, yeah, because if you get there, if you put that crown on your head, it's kind of magic. It really was,
it's
that important.
Thing,
yeah, this was like, Charlemagne took this crown and blah 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 blah. So it's weird. You take a road trip to that museum, steal it, put it on your head, bam, King of Germany. It's just magic.
Yay.
So yeah,
but it not always works like bam, and in this case it didn't work out well, as because his plan to establish a solid power base in Italy failed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He thought, really, it was meant like, that's all I need, is if I can just put the crown on my head. Let's go find out. Let's go to, is it still in Milan? Where's the, I thought it was in, wherever. Let's go. Let's go steal it from the museum, and we'll be kings of Germany. Let's do it. 30, yeah. But so he kind of gives up. What, he's down there for like 5 years. But
it's nice in Italy. Have you ever been there? Yeah.
Couple what times.
Spend?
I miss the food.
The food is great, and the beaches are nice, and it's nice there. It's warm, and I think I can pass 5 years there too.
And you can get by in German in some cities.
So in 1132, he returned to Germany, as we told. His time is still to come. Mm-hmm. Remember Conrad. And now we switch a little to Bohemia, and this is, of course, your part.
This is like, tell where's us. Pete? We need, this is Bohemican. So we've actually mentioned this before. There was this whole, like, he went to Olomouc, which is Olmütz or something, Olmütz in German, mm-hmm. something. And there was a couple of battles in like Bohemia and Moravia. One was in Chlumetz and Zobieslav, which was the king at the time, like decisively kicked this German's butt. Which, so on the Bohemian podcast, we make a big deal out of this because it's this time, or even let me back up, on Reddit, someone asked like a really interesting question, like, why is there the Holy Roman Empire and there's the Kingdom of Bohemia? And even in the Austro-Hungarian Empire, there was Austria and Hungary, and then there's still like the Kingdom of Bohemia, which just came under the King of Austria. So the empire, emperor. And so, and there's a question is like, how is it that this Slavic chunk is missing from the German Empire, from, you know, north of Silesia is like East Prussia, which was German, and south is Austria, which is very German. And in the middle is like this Bohemian Slavic speaking region. How, what? The answer is Sobieslav the First kicked Lothar's butt in 1125 so hard that they still speak Czech to this day. Like, seriously, like, okay, anyways, that's, you know, and then of course there's a longer version of that, this answer. Czechs are very, you know, they've had to fight for it for 1,000 years, but yeah, this is like they won battles and they were able to keep them out. But in the meantime, yeah. So in Lothar's lifetime, this is another very famous event, which is, it's kind of weird that we haven't been talking about, we mention a lot of popes, and it's kind of, we mention a lot of popes and anti-popes, and there's a pope in France, and there's two popes in Rome, one in this castle, one in that castle, or there's the French-backed pope, or the Byzantinian-backed pope, and it's really weird. But before this time, there was one Catholic Church, and there was still kind of like the patriarch in like other countries and other cities, like maybe not Alexandria or Antioch anymore, but the patriarch in Constantinople was still very powerful, you know, was still an archbishop. Finally, and we kind of think of this as like, well, it was just one church or whatever, but no, it was always kind of separate. It was always kind of weird. And finally, in 1130, is one more milestone that gives us today's Catholic Church. There's one pope, and that guy is in Rome. And that is the 1130, the schism of 1130, when the church kind of split, basically.
Say one pope died, Honorius II, and there were two promising candidates for the papacy. First, Innocent II and Anaclet II. Innocent was supported by Bernard of Clairvaux, by Louis VI, Henry I, and a lot of noble and high European leaders.
So another anti-pope, but from different backers, maybe, or yeah, okay, yeah.
Lothar was courted by both popes. Good for him.
You and go, Lothar. Yeah, seriously, that's awesome. Good job.
And they both told him to do what he wanted the most. He wanted to be crowned as an emperor. Yeah.
And you bribe the king, make him emperor. Yeah. So Anaclet, by the way, was the one that was like walled up. He was besieged in the St. Peter's Church. Basilica, yes. Whatever. So
get crowned in the Lateran Basilica.
Okay.
Anaclet successfully defended
Peter's Church. You're right. Yeah.
The Peter's Church where the emperors were crowned so the most time, and so the coronation had to take place at the Lateran Basilica, and there Lothar took 1133 June 4th the imperial crown from Innocent.
Yeah.
And shortly thereafter, Lothar went home. And
and who cares? Innocent gets kicked out of Rome. It doesn't matter. I'm already Kaiser. Like, as soon as he leaves, without
kind
the
of
emperor
in a
there.
Bad mood.
Jeez, that's kind of...
Back in Germany, Lothar finally succeeded in 1135, thanks to the help of Henry the Proud, son-in-law. Yeah.
I was going to say, when historians say he was politically clever and like he married his daughter cleverly, his son-in-law comes and saves him, Heinrich der Stolze,
Henry the Proud. Yes.
God, I don't want to have a beer with anybody named that. Like, oh, Heinrich schon wieder, jeez, shut up.
Together they managed to defeat Staufer.
Decisively, finally.
Bam. Yeah. But then Conrad was reappointed. And he was again in the imperial favor and undertook to participate in the second Italian campaign of the emperor. So this Lothar, since he was in the Reich now the undeniable ruler, made in 1133 with a much larger army than the last time. In fact, Roger II soon thought peace. Yeah.
This whole thing, because it was like, so Innocent was chased out of Rome. Then there was some tension. So Innocent is the one that crowned him, but there was some tension between if he should have. There's this region of southern Italy called Puglia, and like, is that Innocent or not? Is that because really the Normans held southern. I mean, whatever. Anyways, there was some like internal strife between like Pope and Emperor, and he gave up, and he returns home.
Yes, Lothar. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, okay, whatever.
It was then when he died.
I was gonna say this is like, and he does the Otto thing, which is like he goes to Italy, and he's like, oh, that was fun. I got my tan. Time to go back to work and school, and then he just dies. Like.
Yeah.
An idiot. What, do they all get malaria or something? What is wrong with these people? These German Kaisers that die in Italy. There's like, man, Italian. It must be like an Italian joke. Like,
No. he didn't die in Italy. He made it.
Just like shortly. Home. Yeah, gotcha.
Yes, he was still back. What is Germany today?
Technicality. But Breitenfang. Yeah. He died in Breitenfang.
And a month later, Anaclet died too, and it was the end of the schism.
So, kind of anticlimactic. Innocent II is the only person left alive. So he's like, I guess I'm Pope now. And in Germany, there's some Staufer that's like, hey, I'm the only person left alive. But you're going to have to wait for that, because that's next time on the History of Germany podcast. But that's right. So, you know, it is kind of anticlimactic. The Supplinburger dynasty is a one-man dynasty.
Yeah.
I think Lothar's story is pretty interesting. And I thought, like, I didn't just want to do an episode from, like, Staufer to, like, okay, just let's look at only the villagers and how did the... Because the towns changed in this last century and the Crusade started. And I thought, no, let's do all of that separately. We'll look at castles separately and a bunch of things. But Lothar, I was like, he's actually kind of neat. He has this swamp castle, marsh castle, whatever. It's a swamp castle. And he becomes the German emperor. Like, actually gets crowned in Rome and, you know, the whole nine yards and no heirs. And, it's just kind of a weird story. The emperor that could. The emperor that Germans forgot. So there you go. There's Lothar III, a one-man dynasty. Now, okay, before we get into the Staufer, we got, like, so many fun things we want to do as far as, like, episode on Yiddish, episode on castles, crusades. Some of those are going to take a little bit of planning, like crusades. I want to get like Sharon Eastaw in here from the History of Crusades podcast and all kinds of stuff on the horizon. Definitely give the History of the Vikings podcast a listen. They're a great friend of the show and Definitely there's some, I know we're kind of past that time now, but I've just have been having a blast listening to the history of the Vikings podcast. And, you know, we kind of touched on that. And yeah, so yeah. Give them a listen. And besides that, so then we'll kind of come back to, we'll do crusades and castles and Yiddish. And I think there's an heirloom or two that I'm forgetting besides those. And we'll come back with a new mini-series, this one on a very exciting dynasty. So other than, like, Charlemagne, Charles the Great, I really, if you know who Barbarossa is, and, like, this great, these Crusader kings sort of, yes. We're getting into that era. Actually, Barbarossa is maybe one of the only Kaisers that Americans might have heard of. Like, oh yeah, wasn't Barbarossa some... Because he's also really... a pirate, so there's another Barbarossa, so don't get confused now, but yeah.
No, right? We talk about the German Emperor Barbarossa, yeah, and it's good, really
it's like Frederick the Great, Barbarossa, even if people play video games, it's like, okay, you know Frederick the Great, you know Barbarossa, mm-hmm. you know, so like, yeah, cool. So the Staufer, wait, Hohenstaufen is that's like a Swabian dynasty, right? Am I?
The Hohenstaufen is a mountain in Swabia where the castle of the Staufers were.
Are the Staufers like Swabians or did they come
from... Yeah.
So are you proud of the Staufer heritage as a proud Swabian, or you don't care? It's my home
it's my
dynasty.
Home. Yes, it's my home and it's a great story, but
all
I'm not
Saxons,
proud of...
All these Saxons, all these Franks, yay, yes. Swabians.
But let's say I'm not proud to be German because... I haven't done anything.
Nah, proud's the wrong word. I understand that. Yeah, nah, I understand that completely. Proud's the wrong word. It's more like because it's where you grew up. You're like, you're from Swabia, yes, so it's like, hey, this is, have you been to the castle? Have you been to...
Oh, there are no remains of the castle.
Is that a spoiler? Really? It's just gone?
Yeah,
gone?
It's gone. It's
okay.
Still
well, okay. We'll get there.
Earth,
we'll get
yeah.
there. We'll talk about that. But yeah, that's interesting. So you know, it's kind of like we had the Franks had their turn, Saxons, Franks again, and then now finally
yay,
to the Swabians.
Yeah.
Anyways, Barbarossa is definitely one of the more interesting characters. Good old Kaiser Redbeard.
Yeah.
Definitely, I know I already mentioned it, but yes, there is an Heirlooms Erbstücke t-shirt. There's a new History of Germany hat. Not as many as there should be, because I just don't have the time to like create these products, but we got a great deal on vendors. We got great, so we have like new merchandise. Like for the first time, we have like embroidered hats and all that. And we have our first Erbstücke design, which is like...
Great.
Awesome. Like German hieroglyphs. I made sure like Pickelhaube was first because we just did that episode.
Yeah.
There's like a pretzel and, you know, it's like it's German hieroglyphs is kind of the idea, the name of the game. But we got our first t-shirt out and there'll be more coming soon. And there's just, we got some more Bohemian designs, like Think Before You Defenestrate, a new one. The art is amazing. If you haven't seen our stuff before, we don't do this stuff ourselves. We're not that artistic. We have a really great graphic designer and she's just like more talented than all of us, and so it really
yes,
is really
she's
and it's
great
she's
really.
Fantastic and we yeah. It's like it's funny, some of these designs are like they're witty. So yeah, definitely go check out, that is Podcastnik Shop, nice and easy. Podcastnik, podcast NIK shop, podcastnikshop.com, or just go to podcastnik.com and there's a link, and check out the Erbstücke t-shirt. Like, yeah.
I really love her designs.
She's so
amazing.
Great. She can, like, read my mind. I'm like, there's a new secret cabinet design. Anyways, yeah. Just do us a favor. Go check it out. Podcastnikshop.com.
I'm really looking forward. In some weeks, I will visit a place which is related to Barbarossa. Going to the Kyffhäuser. We will
yes.
talk about this. Yes. And I will visit the monument and the Barbarossa cave. And it's just a little spoiler. We will talk about this in an heirloom episode. And I think it will be great. And then I can tell you much more better about this whole stuff when I visited and saw all this
cool.
By myself. Yeah, really. It's pretty amazing.
We got Judit. Oh, by the way, there is a YouTube channel kind of up and running in the make. Pete has more videos up on the Bohemican channel.
Oh, which is linked to, right.
So Pete is stupid good with videos. He's really doing some talented... he's bleeding for it. So go check out the Bohemican YouTube channel. But maybe we'll make Judit, like, put a camera in her hand and take some shots for us of some of these places. And then, you know, make a video out of it somehow. But
I can try. I think I will, of course, podcast... when I'm there, tell you what
also,
bring home some Atmo, and
that'll be awesome. Yep.
Yeah.
I'm not cool Swabian like you, but when I was a kid for a little bit, I did live on the Kiffhäuser Straße. So there.
Oh, this counts too. Yeah.
All right. Of course. I thought so. Yeah. It was Munich, but whatever.
This was today's episode about Lotter. So thank you for listening, and goodbye. Till next time to the History of Germany podcast.
Tschüss. Dankeschön.
Guten Tag, liebe Frau. Es hat mich sehr gefreut.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.